Now, back to
Will and Bibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Well, as we've said since we got started, and our brethren before us have said it as well, today's about you. We want to make sure that our platform is there for you to share whatever you're feeling as Oakland A's baseball in the city of Oakland appears to be coming to a close potentially here within the next 5 to 10 minutes, quite frankly. And so we're going to be all over that, and we're going to take every single one of your calls. But we also want to take this call on the River Islands guest line. This is something we've been excited about for a while, because he too is a local guy, and a month and a half from now, he is going to be inducted into the San Jose Sports Hall of Fame at SAP Center in San Jose, and that's none other than the coach, Mike Holmgren, who joins us now. Coach, congratulations on the honor.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it very much. Nice to be with you.
It's so good to hear your voice, and as I think you just heard us say, like, before we get to football or anything else with your career, would love to, as a local sports guy, get a thought on another team leaving town.
Yeah, no, it's I think any time that happens, it happened in Seattle with the Sonics, it's happened to a number of cities, but it hurts. For the people that have been loyal fans to the Oakland A's for a long, long time, and then all of a sudden they're gone. It's just that loyalty gets challenged, and it's hard. And I hate to see it, quite frankly. I think the cities that make an attempt to rebuild a stadium or whatever they can do, I applaud them for that. It's just tough. It's tough for the fans. Those are the people I think about.
Yeah, and they're definitely going through their emotions right now in Oakland. Coach, can you just speak to the general sense of what you've had as a coach and all your different stops about the connection with fans? Because it seems like the more sports changes, the more that stays the same.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, I've had the privilege of working for the 49ers in the NFL for the 49ers and the Packers and the Seahawks, and then in Cleveland for a brief time. And the fan base in all those cities, they asked who was the best fan base. They're all great. I mean, they are all really special. And you can see it on television. You can read about it. And people love their football teams. I remember in Seattle, as an example, when we built the new stadium, the first year, and the team, we were getting better, but we weren't there yet. And there were a lot of tickets sold to the other side, the other colored jerseys, for fans that would come to the games. Then all of a sudden, we started getting better. They nicknamed the people that would come the 12s. You guys know that.
Yeah.
And then it became the place to be on Sunday or Monday night or whenever. And it's just established a type of fan base that will never change, I don't think. And it really helps the team win. And so, but I saw that type of feeling in a lot of cities. And then when I travel, and I remember in Oakland, that stadium, you know, I've coached in there many times. I hope I don't talk too long here, but I was walking into the stadium. We're playing the Raiders, and you know the Raiders outfits. The guys had the bullets and the guns and the horns in the head.
And the spiked shoulder pads, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm walking in, and you're really close to everybody right there in that little narrow entryway. And some guy's just yelling, just screaming at me. Well, I don't know what prompted me to do this. I turned and faced him. I got it right in his face. I go, what's the matter? What's your problem? And he goes, he whispers, Coach, I'm a banker from Concord. He goes, I really think you're a great coach, really. Best of luck this whole season. Just then a CBS sideline reporter came by with a camera. He goes, okay, I got to go back. And he starts yelling again, you know.
That's a phenomenal
story.
It's a phenomenal story. And by the way, Coach, as you told that story, and I don't want to, at the risk of sounding over dramatic, sports in that building has come to a close. The A's have won the game over the Rangers by a final of 3-2, and the A's have played their final game in Oakland, California. It is a victory. We'll be taking your calls. We'll be getting some people out at that game here shortly, but right now, the honor of hanging out with Coach Mike Holmgren here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Coach, certainly what we just sort of informed everyone about in November, you getting inducted into the San Jose Sports Hall of Fame. What does that mean to you?
It's very, very special. I've said this all along, however, that when I got into this business as a high school coach in San Francisco and then in San Jose, I never thought I was going to be coaching the NFL. I really didn't. I loved high school sports. I loved helping the kids in a lot of ways, I thought. And then things happen, and you move up, and things just happen. But going into a Hall of Fame of any kind, it's a very special thing. But that's not why you worked. That's not why you got into it in the first place. You got in because you loved coaching, you loved teaching, and all that kind of stuff. But it is special. My kids are going to come down for it. They're proud of their dad. I need that every once in a while. And so, it's a very, very special honor, and I thank the people down there very much.
Yeah, it's a big-time names going in with you as well. And I want to go back to the days at Oak Grove High School, 1975. I was around for that now, Coach. I was just a wee little lad. But at the time, were you thinking about maybe taking a bigger bite at the Big Apple and someday being in the NFL, or was that a dream beyond your purview at that time?
No, I'm telling you, I couldn't think of that at all. You know, I think you guys probably know this, or it's common knowledge. My first 22 games as a high school coach, we lost. We were 0-22 at Sacred Heart in San Francisco.
That's awkward.
And so I told Steve Ellison, who was my friend and the head coach, I said, Steve, I don't think I can do this anymore. It's just is too hard. And he talked to me. He goes, stay one more year. We'll just do one more year together and see what happens. And then that third game, that third season, we won. And I tell people, it wasn't Super Bowls. It wasn't Super Bowls I won. The best game of my life, it was that game. And it really, that game kind of kept me going. And I loved high school coaching. It was crazy how things kind of fell into place and allowed me to eventually get to talk to Bill Walsh. And he told me, I've got someone in mind. It's not me. It's not you, Mike, but it was a good interview. And then he phoned me 2 weeks later, and he didn't tell me who the other person was, but he goes, no, it didn't work out, so listen, I want you. And that changed things.
Quite a bit, I'd say. Yeah, Mike Holmgren is joining us here on Willard and Dibbs. Coach, speaking of those 49ers, they're not supposed to be 1-2 right now, but they are. What do you see?
It's all injuries, guys. You know the 49ers better than anybody. And I watch them and admire them and have had a chance to talk to Kyle on occasion. They're hurt. I mean, they're key guys, really good players, have been injured. And so they've lost a couple tough ones. Once they get their team together, they're who they are. And they'll be in the playoffs, and then you need a little luck and all that kind of stuff to get all the way to the Super Bowl. But right now, that's what's happened. And I don't care who you are, when you get key people hurt, you know, it changes things. And if you're playing a good opponent that week, they can beat you.
This is a leading question, and I'm going to admit it up front, but you worked with Joe Montana and Steve Young. What do you see from Brock Purdy?
He puts a smile on my face, honestly. You know, I think of his journey and how he got to where he got, and I just say, bless his heart. You know, he was drafted where he was drafted, and there were reasons for that. You know, when you're evaluating quarterbacks, you know, arm strength, there's a list of things you look at. But he was drafted. He played a lot in college. And the thing that strikes me, I think he's very bright. He's kind of a humble young man. And he happened to come into an organization that will allow any quarterback, I think, to reach his potential. You know, with Kyle Shanahan and the guys around him, the players around him. And so, but then he's gotten better. I mean, he just gets better and better. He's a good decision maker, good, accurate passer. I like him a lot, I think he's going to be there for a long time.
Drafted late, but one round ahead of you, Mike. We should probably point that out. You were an eighth rounder back when they had eight rounds.
That's right. That's right. You know, and then I would say that his career is a little bit better than my playing career. Yes.
Well,
the jury's still out.
I don't know if he's ever going to get inducted into a Hall of Fame. We'll see. We'll see, Coach. Hey, well, just as I said, always great to hear your voice and your perspective on a bunch of different things. So thank you so much. Congratulations again, and we'll tell everybody exactly how they can come see the event in person.
Hey, guys, I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Okay, Mike Holmgren, who will be part of the group, along with the likes of Kerry Walsh Jennings, as you said.
Yep.
There's a great group, Robert Guerrero.
The Ghost!
Are going to be enshrined. San Jose Sports Authority is putting this together on Wednesday, November 13th. All of the inductees are going to have a plaque permanently installed on the concourse at SAP Center in San Jose. For more information and to purchase event tickets, visit the San Jose Sports Authority website, which is sjsa.org/HOF. sjsa.org/HOF.
I love a Hall of Fame ceremony.
There it is.
I'm a sucker for those ceremonies. You get to see a collection of people who are not normally ever together, and the speeches and whatnot. It's pretty cool.
I would imagine you're also a sucker for what we're looking at right now. Watching the A's players head out to the field, grab a little bit of dirt, grab whatever they can to remember whatever it was, their particular experience at the Oakland Coliseum with the curtain falling on A's baseball in that building with a 3-2 victory today over the Texas Rangers. Let this be not the first and not the last time, but if anybody, we see that most people have not even left their seats yet,
right?
But I'm sure some of you are heading to your car. If you were in this building today, look, if you weren't in this building, you're invited. If you were in this building, we really would love to hear from you. Your experience, the experience of others around you, the emotions in the building. This platform belongs to you today. 888-957-9570. We would love to hear from you.
If you think that we're Steiny and Guru, 888-957-9570.
Front of the line if you think we're Steiny and Guru. yeah, so it doesn't matter what you want to say.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say about it, let's do it. Tom was not at the game. Tom is in Wisconsin. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Hey guys, yeah, thanks for having me. Hopefully the cell service is good here, but just wanted to take the opportunity to appreciate Ken Korak. You know, a lot of my memories of A's baseball are tied to Ken Korak, and the lights have taken full effect, and you know, and really for that matter, Ray Fosse. You know, just two quality guys to listen to growing up, listening to baseball. I'll never forget Ray Fosse and his advertisements for Mike and Ike's. Just classic stuff. I mean, you know, some memories of Matt Stairs hitting a grand slam in the first inning of a game in which I think the A's scored 13 runs in the first inning. I think it was either late 90s, early 2000s. I had the opportunity to attend three games late in the 20-game win streak as a high schooler. Game 18, I think, the Tejada game with my dad and my brother. I remember we were going to try to beat traffic towards the BART exit, and we went up and saw Billy Koch blow the lead in the 300 level and stayed to see Tejada hit that home run off everyday Eddie Guardado. I mean, even the next day for Labor Day, I went to the game with my brother and saw Tejada, I think it was game 19, hit a ball up the middle on a crowded infield. I think they brought in a fifth infielder, and he still found a way to get it up through the middle. And then I remember, I think it was the following Tuesday was a night game. Hatterberg saved the day after I think the A's blew God like at least like an 8-run inning. A lot of great memories, and I think just, you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't honor Ken Korak. I mean, that guy, talk about Hall of Fame. I know you guys were talking about it. That guy deserves all the accolades, in my opinion. So appreciate you guys taking the time to let me reflect on it. I've kind of ended the relationship with the A's for the last couple of years, but couldn't resist the opportunity to listen to Ken Korak and Vince today for a couple of innings in between meetings.
Great call.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, Tom, thank you so much. Yeah, whatever. I mean, Ken is a gem of a dude.
An absolute prince of a guy.
Yeah, just a gem of a guy. And whatever your entry point is to this, it's all fair game. It's absolutely all fair game. So, yeah, if it's Bill King,
you
know what I mean? Whatever your entry point is, whatever the sounds are that are resonating in between your ears today, that's all part of this, man.
It's Bill King. Bill King, for me, was it. He was everything, and it was A's and Warriors and Raiders, and I was raised in the era of transistor radio, and you had six channels if you were lucky, and you had to click, click, click on your own TV. And for those of you whippersnappers who don't know what I'm talking about, you can play whatever drop you feel like you need to play, but it was the radio. And for me, it was Bill King and Holy Toledo, and then we were lucky enough as A's fans to get Ken Korak and his dulcet tones. And you're right, an absolute prince of a guy. Yep. And so I feel for him, especially today, because I'm not even positive if he's going to Sacramento or not. I would imagine he is, but he's an Oakland guy, and you know, Vince Catronio and the rest of the crew, Johnny Doskow,
Johnny Doskow.
And then you see Dallas Braden up there on TV. He's kind of become the face of the media part of the franchise. So yeah, you think about a lot of different people. And also, I do want to give one quick shout out to Clay Wood, the groundskeeper, who throughout all the talk of the Coliseum being a quote unquote dump, and there are possums in the press box, and we actually joked around before the show about the trough and the bathrooms and the concession stands and the dilapidated stadium. That field was always, day in and day out, the nicest field in all of professional sports, and that goes to Clay Wood, the groundskeeper, and his great crew.
Yeah, I'm glad you called them out. And by the way, speaking of calling people out, two other things that I'd like to get in there along with all of your phone calls. This is a little bit less of the positive variety. Just want to make sure that Aramark gets a nice bleep you from me for the news coming out yesterday that the Coliseum employees will not have any carryover of their health insurance and will not be getting any severance whatsoever as this all comes to an end. And they found that out just this week. So bleep you too.
That's cool.
Along with John Fisher. Oh my God. Then bleep you, John Fisher, again for something that I did hear a rumor about this morning, and we're getting texts. So thank you, 510. I see you on the Xfinity Mobile text line about how the A's handled their giveaway today, which was that they would not let people have it on their way in. You had to leave by the seventh inning in order to get it, and were not allowed re-entry. And you know exactly why. Because I don't even know what the giveaway was, but I think it was something tangible that they thought was going to get thrown on the field.
Might have been a smoke bomb. We saw plenty of those.
It should have been. It should have been rotten eggs. So thank you for those of you out there who've helped make us aware of how that looked, how it felt, how it went.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's just, it's complete not funny comedy.
Yeah, it just
is. That's the only way I can say it.
It's just one final F you to your fans where, yeah, go ahead and leave early. Please leave early. That way we don't have to deal with you, lingering and celebrating the last days of being A's fans?
No, I look at it this way. On your way out the door, like we've slapped you around for I don't know how many years, and on the way out the door, we just want to say one other thing. If you're John Fisher, this is what he said to his fans. Not only do we not respect you, we don't trust you either. That was basically his message today.
And we want you gone as soon as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the money.
The giveaway today was a replica of the stadium, by the way.
There you go.
And looking at some of the images, not the greatest.
Not a great replica.
No. With Mount Davis, I hope, right?
With Mount Davis, okay. Correct.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm trying to not devolve into the negative because it's just there's so much anger, you know?
It is important to say that stuff, though.
You're allowed to feel however you want to feel. And I'm kind of trying to fight that part of it because when I go there, You know me, Mark. I can be very, very edgy and angry, and I'm trying to keep that out of my thoughts today and my memories,
yep.
You know?
Yep, and that's fair. That's completely fair. We're going to keep going with the calls. Larry,
I'm an angry little guy.
Well, mid-sized.
You got to cut that.
Yeah, mid-sized guy. Yeah, anyway. Larry Beal,
smaller.
Larry Beal is going to call in about 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, and we got time for more calls right now. We'll do that. Want everybody to hear this, though. This is just a little piece of what Larry did on ABC 7 the other night.
You heard Fisher's statement. Let me tell you what reality is, okay? John, you tried 5 different, extremely flawed stadium proposals. You never got even close to a shovel in the ground. Yes, Oakland politics is often a mess. I will give you that. But John, you surround yourself with incompetent yes men, and because you were born into a billionaire family, apparently never learned you have to spend money to make money. See Joe Lacob and the Golden State Warriors, your buddy, who still wants to buy the team. John, you're a serial penny pincher. You've destroyed your family's great name and legacy because of your cheapness. As for the statement about loyal A's fans, quote, I wish I could speak to each and every one of you individually, end quote. Seriously? John, we've been trying to interview you for years, but you always choose to remain invisible unless you're begging politicians for public funding. And then you're out in front in Las Vegas.
Well done, Larry, for sure. And I was listening to the roast this morning, and Bonte made a comment at one point about how John can't even show his face in this town, can't even walk down the street in this town. And it was funny what my thought was. I'm like, actually, yes, he can, because most people have no clue what he looks like.
He could be in our office right now.
Yep.
And you would have no idea.
So that's how much of a coward he is. He's not just bad. He's so bad. He's the Wizard of Oz. You have no clue what he even looks like.
And that's why he trotted out Dave Cavill as his marionette, as, you know, he was the puppet master and he had his finger in Cavill's back, and Cavill's out there still, blah, 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 talking about this and that and trying to sell John's plan and do John's bidding. And, you know, part of me would feel bad about David Cavill, but I know him and he's a smart guy and he's done all of the things he's done willingly and he's on the payroll and he's done it knowingly.
He's doing his job.
It's not like he's unwittingly going about doing this man's bidding.
No, he didn't get hypnotized, for goodness sakes. Let's go to Buddy in Walnut Creek. Hi, Buddy. Thank you for calling.
Willard, Dibs, how are you today?
We're good, man.
Good.
Guys, first and foremost, what I don't want to make this call about, or even the discussion, is about Mr. Fisher. You know, going back to a previous call and calling about Ken Korbach, he made a comment in a quote calling, the only concrete cavern that could provide a warm embrace. That's what the Coliseum was. And, you know, I liken this, you know, and I'm gonna raise my hand and say I've been a Giants fan, have not been an A's fan, but I've certainly had some amazing, amazing moments there. And, you know, I liken this to you remember your first girlfriend when you're in elementary school? She was your best friend. You climbed trees together. You scraped your knees together. Mm. Then you went to junior high school and you went to the dance together. You were already making plans. You went to high school. She was your girlfriend. You went to prom, and then all of a sudden it came time to maybe go to college. And you were from the other side of the tracks. You weren't going to Stanford. You weren't going to go to Cal. You're going to maybe go to DBC. You're not going there. But her dad says, you know what? Not only is she not going to Cal Stanford, I'm sending her out of state. She's going to Duke. And all of a sudden, this girl you've loved your whole life, this girl you've spent time with, scraped your knees with, climbed trees with, enjoyed most of the amazing things in your life together, and she's going to leave. And not because she wants to leave. She doesn't want to leave. You don't want to leave. Her dad wants her to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, she's gone. And now what do you have left? You got nothing. You got memories. And memories are awesome, but you don't have a legacy that you're going to go bring on to your next future, to your kids, that you're going to show your grandkids, that maybe your dad and your grandfather got to show you. And that's where I think sports, I was in Safeway today. It was amazing. And there's a lady in line and she said,
Hey, buddy, can you guys put him back on hold? Buddy, I'm so sorry. We have to pause, but I do not want to interrupt your story. So hang right there, and we're going to get back to you in a little bit. Larry Beal is going to come on the show. All of your calls, they're all going to get on, and you're going to get everything out. Okay? So that's what's coming up here around the bend on Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Here's the 1-2. Jankowski to Schumann. And the ground ball will end things. A 3-2 win for the Oakland Athletics. One more win for the Oakland fans.
A W on a day that everybody in the Bay needed one.
That's Jenny Kavanaugh, NBC Sports California, with what I would imagine will be a call that is played again a time or two. The Oakland A's have completed their time in Oakland, California. They beat the Rangers today 3-2. I hope that gave some people a smile on their face, but obviously that is a tiny token of appreciation on the way out the door in what is largely a very, very sad and frustrating story.
Grandy's got me like thinking about welling up in tears with the celebration, Cool and the Gang, yep. Rejoin, and apologies to the YouTube audience. You know the song, and you know that it's become synonymous with Oakland A's baseball victories, and so... Man, if there's one thing that was going to trigger the tears, Grandy, you might have just done it.
I wonder if this will do it, or maybe it'll trigger something else, because he certainly did the other night on ABC7. Our good
man,
buddy Larry Beal, let it loose, and it was phenomenal content, and it struck a chord, and all of those things. So welcome in, Larry, and it's great to have you on a busy day.
Yeah, it's a wild day. It's a sad day. It's a frustrating day. What's been funny in the past few days as the video has circulated around, you know, people are like, well, you got to do another one. Like, okay, the next time a team leaves after 57 years, I'll work something up for you. But it's not like, you know, I can get that upset about, you know, who's playing two guard next to Steph. It's just, the rant just doesn't have the same intensity at that point.
Well, right here on the River Islands guest line, it's Larry Beal. So are you saying you don't have another one ready for us today?
Oh, you know, I'll have some pointed remarks towards the owner because, you know, we've been covering this thing for years and years and years, and John Fisher's inability, his consistent bumbling and bungling every possible stadium deal leaves me with just a glimmer of hope that he can screw up this one also, either in Sacramento or in Vegas. I mean... They had been working with Goldman Sachs for well over a year. And if Goldman Sachs can't work it out for you, like, how are we going to get this thing built? I think you have a problem. I'm not a financial analyst, but it seems to me that that should be a little bit worrisome, especially when your proposal is to continue to remain on revenue sharing in a new ballpark. Who would invest in that? That means you're not making any money. I don't get it.
Yeah, and also the Nevada legislature and the voters seem all too willing to give him $600 million to help prop this thing up. But, Larry, just hearing your rant and having you on the phone here makes me think about your catchphrase, aloha means goodbye. Oh, and yeah. Today, it really does mean goodbye. So beyond the evisceration of John Fisher, what are the emotions for you as a guy who's been in this market for a long time and what you're feeling from fans today?
I feel for them so much. And my first interview that I did in the Bay Area when I came from Hawaii was 1989. And I sat down in the seats at the Coliseum and did a one-on-one interview with Sandy Alderson, who was then the general manager, and had, you know, followed the team through all the great years and the Bash Brother years. And I mean, when I saw last night at the end of the game that the grounds crew was sweeping up dirt and pouring the dirt into water bottles for fans because they wanted to have a lifelong memory of the Coliseum, I started tearing up because I was like, my goodness, this is so emotional. And I can't even imagine, you know, today at least they won the game. And I, you know, somebody described it last night as like part playoff game, part funeral. And I think those are the emotions that we're all wrestling with at this point, because something that is beloved is being torn away from a community that desperately needs it because of one man's greed. That's it.
Yep, man, that's very well said. Larry Beal with us here on Willard and Dibs. Larry, I'm also trying to think back because I, in general, hate relocation, especially modern relocation. It's born from greed. I think it's disingenuous. They put up these renderings and plans that they know are going to fail so that they can legally get their way out. But you know what's different about this one? I was thinking about this today. I don't know if I can think of another relocation where they didn't even have anywhere to go and they were still left. That's what's craziest about this for me.
That is actually a great point that I hadn't thought of. I mean, you know, I've got a bunch of friends that live in Seattle, and they still, I mean, 20-plus years later are talking about, or maybe it's not 20, but the Supersonics of being moved to Oklahoma City. And, you know, you could go back to Art Modell and the Colts going from Baltimore to Indianapolis. This is not a new thing. Chargers, San Diego to L.A., Rams from L.A. to St. Louis, 20 years there, then back to L.A. But you're right. It's almost like, yeah, we'll maybe we'll play on a floating stadium that just travels around the Bay Area. Or it's so dumb. And just to kind of have Sacramento as your landing spot temporarily in a minor league park with artificial turf being installed. It's 110 in the summer in Sacramento. On artificial turf, it'll be 130 or 140. You could have guys with their cleats melting. And you imagine, you know, the Dodgers come in for a series and Shohei Ohtani is looking around and it's like 110 degrees. And he's like, no. I don't understand why the Players Association has not made a bigger fuss about this. They've been pretty quiet. I'm wondering what they're waiting on, because so many players would just say, no way. And what kind of a team are they going to put out? I mean, the A's have some decent young players right now. Would any free agent sign with them? You'd run the opposite way.
And in the interim, it's going to be playing at a AAA stadium, which I'm told is very nice, but I'm also being told that the facilities, the locker rooms are, well, wait for it, minor league caliber. So do you still think that, and you mentioned this earlier, like you're kind of holding out a sliver, a tiny sliver of hope that this thing blows up. Is there any possible way that this goes so badly that John Fisher is forced to sell and that they could possibly relocate back to Oakland?
or relocate.
Thank you. Shout out Al Davis with the re.
I think there is some hope, just because given the history, you have an owner who's you know screwed up every potential move, and you know I covered all of these, so I know each potential proposal in detail. Like, how about this? They tried to do a deal with Peralta College. They announced that they were buying the land.
So good.
Except they never told Peralta College that they were going to try to buy them. It's like me rolling up to your house, Dibs, and going, yeah, this is mine now. And you go, well, who the hell are you? And no, I'm not leaving my house.
Yeah.
So get out of here.
You remember Warm Springs, too, down there in Fremont on the edge of San Jose?
Oh, yeah.
After the Giants blocked them from San Jose, then they, okay, we're going to go to Warm Springs. Okay.
All of them have been so ridiculous. Even going back to the first one, Lou Wolf, when he first took over the team, this is a guy who's been, you know, a very successful real estate developer. He announced out of the blue that they were going to buy up all of the warehouses and all the land around the Coliseum to make it a Coliseum city, if you remember that phrase.
That's right.
Okay. Well, when they built Disneyland, they were smart enough. Walt was smart enough to form a bunch of LLCs and bought off all the land. And then when he had all the land, he announced it. When Walt did it, he announced it first, and all of the people that owned the land were like, yeah, well, now it's 10X. So none of this has made any sense from the jump. But, yeah, I mean, maybe there's a 3% to 5% chance if there's enough bungling that goes along the way in the next few years. Look, Vivek Ranadive is a billionaire. He owns the Sacramento Kings. He owns the Rivercat Stadium, Sutter Hill Field. He's banking on failure in Vegas. That's why he's charging the A's zero rent, because he's betting that Major League Baseball will say, you know what? They've been in Sacramento for a year or two. We'll just leave them there, and Vivek, can you build a stadium for us?
Well,
now, at that point,
go ahead, Larry. Sorry.
No, at that point, you know, maybe it's up for grabs, and maybe people like Joe Lacob and the AASEG group and others in Oakland will
you know, come to the forefront, and you could have sort of a, no, well, we want it, and this is a bigger market. Why would you leave one of the top 10 markets in the country to go to either Sacramento, and nothing against the fine people of Sacramento, it's just, you know, not as many people there, or Vegas? They're going to be like the fifth or sixth most relevant team in Vegas if they ever get there. So,
yeah, Larry, that's the question for me when you talk about even the tiny percent chance of everything falling apart and them coming back. Do you think Oakland A's fans would welcome them back if Fisher were still the owner?
No. Can you take out that last line?
Well, right? Yeah, I mean, these are two pieces of the puzzle, right? Like, he's got to be convinced to sell, which has not happened yet. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that would be an interesting scenario. Because if he was going to run it the same way that he runs now, then what would be the point? Now, if he had this epiphany, and maybe he sat down with his buddy Joe Lacob, you know, in a billionaire's club lunch, and Joe said, you know, my philosophy is spend money to make money. You might want to try that instead of, you know, continually shrinking the budget. How about this? 2004. Eric Chavez signed a deal for $66 million, six for 66. 2005, Fisher and Wolf buy the team. The Chavez contract is still the largest contract this team has ever given out. And it's 20 years later, and you have, like, Shohei's making $700 million a year. You got guys signing for $200-300 million, you know, left and right all over the place. And the Chavez contract from 20 years ago is still the high watermark for this franchise. That's
unbelievable. Crazy. It's unbelievable. Larry, thank you for your work the other night. Thank you for coming on today.
Anytime. Love you guys.
All right, Larry, thank you.
Appreciate you, brother. There it is. That's Larry Beal joining us here on Willard and Dibs. Look, Buddy from Walnut Creek was just about to share a story. I think where he was, it started with he was in the aisles at Safeway.
Yeah.
And we're like, we'll see you there.
Totally.
But then we had to cut him off because we had to go to break, and Buddy was kind enough to hold. So, Buddy, back to you.
What's up, fellas?
Bring it home, Buddy, if you would. We have many people on hold.
I know you do, and I'll try to make it quick here because there's a lot of people who've been waiting just as I have. But I was in Safeway today, and a woman said, I'm fine if all professional sports goes away.
Huh.
And I wasn't, and she was an older woman. She was standing in line, and I wasn't sure if I should punch her in the face or kneel down and say, I believe you. And I stepped back and I looked at her and I said, are you serious? And she says, yes, I'm just tired of all this ridiculousness and money and owners and all. And I said, do you understand how important sports are in our world? And I said, do you like watching your kid? Do you have grandkids? She says, yes, they do. I said, do they play sports? Yes. What do they play? Oh, they play soccer and they play baseball. I said, you go to their games? Yes, I do. I love watching their games. I said, what do you think they might want to be when they grow up? She said, I don't know. Doctors, lawyers, professional soccer players, baseball. I said, exactly. And I said, so you know the difference sports makes in people's lives? It is absolutely unbelievable. I said, you remember COVID when they had people's just paper mache fans?
There it is.
I said, that is life without sports. That's what's like. I said, sports, and again, I know I said I was going to rip on Fisher, but this is what pisses me off about ownership and sports. It's not about cash. It is not about cash. It's about cash for the athletes, and I get that. What it is, it's other C's. It's community.
Mm.
It's charity.
Talk to them.
It's character. And it's championships. That's what sports is about, okay? It's community, character, charity, and championships. And you know what that does? That builds wealth. That builds your franchise. The reason why franchises are successful isn't because they save money. It's because they spend money.
Hmm.
And they spend money, why? Because they want their team to be a champion. They want their community to be a champion. They want to represent charity and character. And what the Oakland A's have done as a community, all of those things. But what their ownership has done is none of them. And that's what pisses me off.
Buddy, it's a you finished it well.
Thanks,
buddy. It's a really good call.
He brought
actually,
it home.
Well, and he brought home his own call with exactly where my mind was when he's talking about the woman he ran into that was like, I just wish sports would go away. It made me think of the pandemic. It made me think of a good friend of mine who kept telling me she was upset that sports didn't come back sooner. Cardboard cutouts, whatever.
Yeah.
But all the whole, like, you know, and I get it, the athletes needed to be protected too. You don't want everybody to start sharing all their germs or whatever.
Right.
But at the same time, her point was the whole world right now, certainly our country, the way we operate, but the whole world is just completely down in the doldrums. And her point was it is the responsibility of the sports franchise to get back out there as quickly as possible because we need you. We need this distraction. We need, and I get it, there's all kinds of different topics that come up there about how they would have executed it. But whether that point is a good one or not, for me, it's more about what sports does for us. Remember The Last Dance. We're in the pandemic. We went to a 30-year-old story and watched it at some of the highest rating levels that we've ever seen because we were dying for these stories, these players, these pictures, all of that.
Think about Tiger King. I mean, Tiger King was a gigantic phenomenon for the same reason. Yep. Now, it wasn't truly like sports, but It was Carol Baskin.
Yeah, you were picking sides and rooting.
And it was the Tiger against all his handlers. And so
I was rooting for the Tiger.
It was it. Score one for the Tiger and that the one guy who lost his arm. But sports gives us something that life usually doesn't. Like, in your life, at the end of a day, with your three kids and your five jobs, you don't always have that definitive win or loss kind of a paradigm. And that's why we love football, because after a Sunday, your team either won or they lost. And it's very clear and it's concrete. And that's what sports gives you. And it gives you that clear win-loss kind of a result that life doesn't usually do.
888-957-9570 is the number. The Courier on 880, possibly not on 880 anymore. Hey, Courier, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding.
No problem. Yeah, I'm actually 101 in Novato now. Been on hold for a bit.
Yes, you have.
Growing up, my dad was all Niners and NASCAR. I had no interest in NASCAR. I loved the Niners. It was probably second, third grade, summer 87, 88, we had this read-a-thon, book-thon thing at school. You know, read so many books, win some prizes. And I won 2 A's tickets. My dad had zero interest in baseball, but he took me anyways that summer. Cleveland Indians, smokes on the mound, puts one in the back of Andy Allison, a Cleveland Indians catcher, invited him to the mound, bench-clearing brawl. I'm a lifetime A's fan.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a good story.
I love it. Courier, thank you very much. I mean,
Smoke was the guy, too. Where,
of course he was.
I mean, with the hat slung low,
yep,
and those steely eyes, and you knew what was coming for the most part, and good luck trying to get out there and hit it. And I was telling the story earlier in the green room about the opening night, 1988, the same night that Danny Manning beat Oklahoma. And Dave Stewart always started the home opener. And my friends and I, we would always go to the home opener. There'd be fireworks. It'd be a sold-out crowd. And that night, I was listening to the Kansas-Oklahoma National Championship game on my Walkman, 1988, as a 20-year-old, waiting for Dave Stewart to throw. And as the hoop game ended, the fireworks were going, and Dave Stewart took the mound. And yep, that's one of those core sports memories.
One thing I'll say about the A's franchise, and not every franchise has this, too. You look back through the years, there are personalities who stand out, and even just their performances stand out. In other words, their way. You know what I mean? Like, not every franchise has that. You know, maybe this is a bad example. This is just the one that popped into my mind. But, like, look at the two franchises in Florida, okay? Marlins and Rays. And they've kind of been compared to the A's some in recent years with the way they go about their business. But when you think of those franchises, what's the picture that stands out in your head of the greatness that's come through those stadiums or worn that uniform? The Marlins have a championship. Maybe you think of LeVon Hernandez, yep, or something. Yep. but go all the way back, and I'm sure even obviously well before my time, but I can think of, you know, the A's of the 70s were so fantastic, and Catfish, and then there's Ricky Henderson, and then you get to the Bash Brothers age, and even players like Carney Lansford in that crazy batting stance where it looked like he was trying to pull the bat down through the floor, Dave Stewart, Eck,
yep.
And it just keeps going on and on to the, you know, Giambis of the world and everything that's ended up happening with Moneyball. That's the stuff. Like, that's these are larger than life characters that stick with people, even if they're not like diehard fans of that team. And again, I keep going back to the same thing, which is this, like, the young sports fans of the East Bay now. They don't get that.
Yeah.
You don't get to have that.
Well, the A's teams you're describing, they had personality and they had identity, much like the Raiders teams of the 70s and the 80s. And you go back to Matuszak and Stabler and all the rest of it and John Madden. They had a personality and they had an image. And the A's teams were the same. The 70s A's, they were so talented, and you had Billy Martin, and you hated the owner, and then you go all through with Reggie Jackson, and, you know, skip forward, like you're saying, the Bash Brothers and all the rest of it. There was an identity, and it was really much simpatico with the East Bay, because the East Bay's always been a little bit more diverse and a little bit more underdog, a little bit more of a grinder part of the Bay Area. You know, the East Bay people look at the peninsula and the North Bay as the white wine sippers and a little bit more bougie. And so I do think that from a sports landscape standpoint, that's part of the identity that's leaving today, and that's what sucks.
Be patient. We're coming. This is your platform today to say whatever it is you want about the situation at hand, and we are wide open the rest of the way. So the next 2 hours are really for you, and again, I want to put out another plea to anybody who was in that building today. My gosh, we would really love to hear from you, and we would be honored to be the place where you share your emotions after an event like today. So 888-957-9570 is the number. We are straight to your calls, and we are nothing but your calls the rest of the way on Willard and Dibs.